This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, June 2nd, 2006. I'm Jay Pierce. Jason Croft, our technical director this afternoon. In a few moments, we will talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Also this half hour, the final installment of our three-part interview with Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt. Politicians in Washington, D.C. are signaling that they want to allocate even larger amounts of U.S. corn and soybean production to the energy sector as opposed to feed and food. Hurt analyzes the new paradigm. The Farm Bureau will also be by with a commentary, and Illinois State climatologist Jim Angel will have the latest in agricultural weather. So here's hoping you're in the mood for the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Well, in Kansas City, July wheat closed up 10 and 3 quarters at 494 and a quarter. The September contract ended up at 504 and a half, up 9 and a half. July wheat, 403 and three quarters. So that was up 11 and three quarters. September closed up 9 and a half at 417 and a half. And December up 11 and a quarter at 436 and a quarter. July corn ended up 5 at 259 and a half. The September contract at 271 was up 4 and 3 quarters. December at 285 up 4 and a quarter. March 07 up 4 and a quarter to 295 even. July soybeans 609 up 22 and a quarter today. August up 21 cents at 614 and 3 quarters. September up 20 and 3 quarters at 621 even. And November up 20 and 3 quarters at 633 and a quarter. July soybean meal up 10.20 at 185.40. July oil up 28 at 25.43 on the close. August feeder cattle 110.22 and a half up 25. The live cattle for June ended up 35 at 80.32 and a half. And the June lean hogs ended down 20 at 69.40. And now let's bring in Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us every Friday in the Closing Market Report. And good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, we saw a lot of green on the board today as we closed things out. A lot of activity, too.
Yeah, we did. You know, the beans led the charge today. We talked to the floor right after the close, Jay, and it sounded like from our sources down there that we were running a very heavy fund buying day today. 15,000 contracts expected to be bought in beans. That would probably take these folks, the funds in particular, probably back to steady, if not plus a little bit on the next commitment of traders report, not today, but next Friday. They also reportedly came in and bought 12,000 to 15,000 contracts meal, 5,000 soy oil, 4,000 to 6,000 in the corn, and around 5,000 contracts of wheat. We asked the specific question, was there anything other than just the fund buying? In other words, we had heard earlier this week that maybe China would come in. Someone had heard that even this morning in the pits, and we got that reported back to us. But no real firm numbers or reports at all about China coming in and buying anything. So most of everything that we have been told and could get from the pits at this point was the fact that the funds came in, and even though one of the weather models in the midday turned cooler, it sounded like the floor sources just stayed with and the pits stayed with the hot and dry conditions.
Mm-hmm. What, was, did this catch people by surprise?
Well, I think any time you go from a May 12th high to a June 1st low of 32 cents down in November beans, and in one day you bring 70% of that back, I think you do get surprised. I mean, we certainly were surprised. We're very happy we're in bought puts and not in short futures or a lot of cash sales on the books, because this is the type of temperament this market has. And I guess there's one wild card thought we had of why the funds would buy on today specifically, other than we're starting a new month. And we did see after that payroll data you and I talked about earlier today,
mm-hmm.
the dollar broke to a new two-week low. The bonds broke up, broke higher, went up over a point, and that took the 10-year Treasury yield down below 5% for the first time in a few weeks. One of the wild card thoughts we had is for the prices, does this open the door for more inflationary pressure? Because after that payrolls data came out, Jay, a lot of the folks were thinking maybe the Fed won't come in on their June 28th, June 29th meeting and raise the discount or the federal fund rate another quarter point, quarter percentage point, and they won't try and squelch demand off. And maybe, by the way, the dollar reacted and the bonds reacted to this payroll data, and the Fed minutes earlier this week were overshadowed by this payroll data. Maybe it says to the markets and it says to the commodity, you know, fund buyers, for prices anyway, this means that inflation is going to be let loose a little bit, and the Fed won't try and squelch it. And you know, when you look at the percentage changes on the day, the markets that were up over 3% were the beans, the wheat, the energy complexes were almost all up over 3%, and then also the copper, you know, that main industrial commodity, that base metal commodity that has really led the charge of this commodity rally since going all the way back to 2002. So it's a wild card thought. We realize that, and it's hard to pin it on just one day of trade, but it would make some sense if you don't have something like China come in. And, you know, clearly, like we said, the weather is an issue, but it's pretty early in the year to be buying commodities really, really hard with weather just being the main catalyst.
Mm-hmm. Well, so people will be analyzing this, and I'm sure it's going to be the talk of Commodity Week this week, which people will be listening to tomorrow morning. But what about Monday morning when that rolls around? What are you thinking about, you know, for Monday, and what kinds of strategies ought to, or what kind of reaction should, you know, how do you analyze something like
sure,
this over the weekend?
It's a great question. I think what we're going to do is stick with our program of just, you know, getting people bought and bought puts and beans, catch-up buyers. You know, we're trying to get everybody up to 75% hedged in 06 beans, and we're trying to get that done with bought puts, especially at this stage. So if this issue that we're talking about with the dollar and the bonds and this inflationary information comes through as an accurate portrayal of what's going on in the markets, that would open the door now between here and the Federal Reserve meeting on June 28th that the dollar is going to stay weaker, maintain its lower bias, and it would open the door that between now and June 28th, therefore, and ahead of the grain stocks and grain acreage report by USDA, that the commodities have a chance to go up there and test and maybe even go through some of their old highs. And we're going to really be looking hard at the corn to get some more hedges made. We've got we're within earshot now of the contract high in December futures of 287 and a quarter. We penetrate that and can get another 8 or 9 cents above that and get sneak up underneath that $3 level before that June 30th acreage report and the June 28th Fed meeting. We'll go ahead and get some puts bought there as well. So we're going to try and give this market some breathing room, but we're sure going to try and take advantage of it. If it follows the next 20 marketing days, we have a higher bias.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at livestock today and get a little analysis on how that closed.
Had a good week as a whole. You know, the market really gelled nicely in cattle early in the week, and then the hogs had a very strong fund-buying day. Packers were a little bit caught short, and so they knocked their bids up after some grade and yield premium. Some areas were able to get, and some producers were able to get almost $70. Our advice there is pretty simple. This is the time of year, since we're past the Memorial Day holiday, that with high cold storage numbers of pork and you've got a very temperamental retail market because of the chicken and the bird flu and things like that, that stay current. Stay very current and don't add weights if you get $70 on the meat price or better. And we're going ahead and buying puts and hogs right now on this rally for the June through August marketings. The one thing we do note is that the cash index is now almost $3 discount to the lead month futures. If you'd go back a couple weeks, it was the exact opposite. We were running $2.5 to $3 premium in the cash index. So now you've got a situation where the cash is leading the market higher, and that gives us the ability to get some good hedges in place. But we also have to realize that the retail market's very fickle, and the packers can rely upon some heavy cold storage numbers to work their way out of a short situation. Mm-hmm. And probably won't want to bid up too much above 82, 83 in cattle and $70 in the meat and hogs.
All right, Mike. Well, you have yourself a great weekend. Thank you very much, as always.
Thanks again, Jay. You have a nice weekend, too.
Thank you. It's Mike Zuccolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us every Friday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at agricultural weather with Jim Angel from the Midwestern Climate Center. AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser is predicting a few widely scattered showers and thunderstorms during the evening hours across our two states. Otherwise, partly cloudy tonight. Lows ranging from 53 to 59 degrees. Mix of clouds and sunshine across most of the northern, central, and southwestern Illinois areas and in northern and west central Indiana, with a few widely scattered showers and thunderstorms popping up throughout the rest of this afternoon, perhaps, and then we'll have mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers elsewhere. High 68 in southeast Indiana to 86 in northwestern Illinois for the remainder of today. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny across the two states. 79 degrees right now in Urbana. Well, last year, Congress established a renewable fuel standards, a standard of 7.5 billion gallons of ethanol by 2012. Now there's talk on Capitol Hill that the standard should be raised this year. Energy consultants are projecting that as much as half of the U.S. corn crop could go towards supplying fuel companies within 6 years. Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt recently sat down with Todd Gleason to talk about the new paradigm between energy and feed usage and how lawmakers are viewing the issue.
And finally, could you address the issue of policy in Washington as it concerns ethanol from corn versus ethanol from cellulosic types of products, for instance, switchgrass, and what kind of impact that may or may not have on the corn market over the long run?
Obviously, the growth of ethanol right now is based on our ability to be able to put plants, corn or starch-based plants, in production as quickly as we can get those constructed. The reason we can do that is because we go back really 30 years ago to the 1970s, when we had another energy crisis in the early 70s with the formation of OPEC, and we learned the technology of extracting ethanol from corn. That technology then has been enhanced over the 30-plus year period that we have been through. What we face today is the ability, the knowledge, the capability to be able to put those corn-based ethanol plants in place. The cellulosic-based plants, we do not have all of that technology. We do not have all of the answers at commercial scale plants to do that. It's probably coming very rapidly. As we look at the policy dimension, we've had introduction by Senators Lugar and Harkin, a bill in the Senate just recently to increase the renewable fuel standard to 10 billion gallons by 2010. Now, the current standard in the energy bill is 7.5 billion by 2012. We are going to probably reach the 7.5 billion gallon renewable fuel standard by 2008. So essentially, the Harkin and Lugar proposal is to increase that even by 2010 to at least the 10 billion gallons. But following through, they go to their proposal is to go to 30 billion gallons renewable fuels by 2020. Now, to do that, just to illustrate, with our current size of our corn crop, it would take virtually all of our corn, about 11 billion bushels, to produce 30 billion gallons of ethanol. So with the recognition is that we have to have some other source probably after 2010, and that would be the hope it's going to be cellulosic-based. So I think that technology is just not all available. There is great promise in that technology. The technology we do have is a starch-based, is the seed-based technology that we have, and perhaps that'll be a bridge. to the cellulosic-based. But I think there's no question that once these plants get in place, we probably will continue to see many of them operate for years into the future. Many of those will be corn-based. And then someplace in the 2012 to 2015, we'll be hopeful that the cellulose-based agriculture, ethanol production and agriculture that will have to be supplying that will become more of the domineering technology that can boost us from maybe in that 7.5 to 10 billion gallons on up to the 30 billion that is being proposed at this point by 2020. I think the bottom line is we're just not quite there on the cellulose-based. There's great promise. The demands for our research base in our universities is great to help solve these issues. The opportunities for farms probably is going to be quite large. And perhaps that this will be in an entire revolution in very much of the way we farm, what we farm, the crops we farm, and may even have some pretty major implications on where we move our commodities, how much is exported, how much is kept in the United States, and even on the food consumption patterns of our consumers in the United States. Really big, big opportunities, and I think we can say that ethanol is a big deal to agriculture, and the driving and the dining are going to certainly be part of the menu for agriculture in the future.
Chris, we appreciate you being with us.
It's been a pleasure, Todd.
Chris Hurt is an Extension Ag Economist at Purdue University. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
And you can read Chris Hurt's analysis on the World Wide Web. Go to farmdoc.uiuc.edu and click on the marketing link.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580 and online at will.uiuc.edu. In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says regulating every drop of water doesn't make sense.
American farmers have a good track record of taking care of the land and water through conservation, including wetlands protection and restoration. That's why Farm Bureau is closely watching and awaiting a decision currently before the United States Supreme Court that could alter the Clean Water Act as we know it. At issue are two consolidated cases looking at whether wetlands should be subject to the Clean Water Act protection based on remote or non-existent connections to navigable waters. Farm Bureau strongly believes that man-made drainage ditches, fields, and pastures that have been used by farmers for years should not be federally regulated in the same way as rivers, streams, swamps, and bogs. Regulating a field with a few low spots is not logical. We would be turning the tide on common sense. Further, if the Clean Water Act is extended to include ditches, stock tanks, and long-used fields and pastures, then the federal government will be regulating every drop of water that falls in this country, regardless of how far removed and isolated those droplets are from a stream, river, or other substantial body of water. So, who is behind this? I call them big money groups who parade around photos of cute ducks swimming in a pond and tell folks that farmers are responsible for harming wildlife. Many of these same people believe dips and depressions that are never muddy enough to bog down a truck need the same type of protection as a river, lake, or stream. These people see a wetland where you and I see a field, ditch, or wet area around a stock tank. Considering that farmers usually live on or very near their land, it's in their best interest to ensure its quality as well as that of the water they and their family members use on a daily basis. If the Clean Water Act is allowed to extend to all fields, ditches, and man-made puddles, it would affect mostly private cropland or pastures that have been maintained by farmers for generations. It won't matter how much time or money a farmer has spent improving and caring for the land if the Clean Water Act is extended to cover every drop of water that falls on the property. The land would be made worse off by regulations intended to do just the opposite. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochka's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
How are the basis levels today?
Depends on the commodity. Corn hung in pretty well, and basically treading water isn't too bad considering the rally on it. We'd seen some little bit of improving basis interest over the last couple days. I think we probably put a stop to that with today's pop, although you know we're looking at some of the same corn flat price numbers that we've seen before, so no new ground and you know not nearly the cash movement that we saw a few weeks ago on the big surprise Friday pop. Soybean basis, same thing, had been steady. I would be kind of tentative on it this afternoon. Probably the biggest thing has been the soft red winter wheat basis, and that has just been under a tremendous amount of pressure. We've got a real dichotomy between cash prices and the market, the soft red market, that the market really is afloat in. We've got a good crop coming on, quality is good, and we don't have that much demand for it, so we're going to have to carry the wheat over. We have a CBOT, the futures prices are going through the roof in sympathy with the hard red winter where there are significant problems, so that's dragging the futures price up, and we are seeing just some horrendous basis numbers on the wheat side.
Mm-hmm. I guess the irony out with the hard red winter wheat is that after all of the hot, dry conditions, the recent rains are delaying any harvest that was going to.
Yeah, and it's just like the poster child for what you don't want on a wheat crop.
Yeah.
You're facing harvest and you end up with a lot of rain. You delay harvest and look at quality problems on test weight or sprout damage on what you have left out there.
Mm-hmm. What about processor demand in the area here?
Steady, although there is a lot of hedged inventory out there to cover any processor needs. I mean, the thing from the processor standpoint is if they need any corn or any soybeans at any time, a couple cent basis pop, I think, would bring enough hedged inventory to get everything that they need covered in.
Mm-hmm. Price levels farmers are looking for?
Oh, flat prices. You know, $6 is a round number, and we're still a ways away from that. New crop levels, we're right up flirting with it, so I think that's kind of the magic number there. Corn, I'm not sure where we get the next level of scale-up selling. Part of it might be kind of a function of time, too. Although, you know, right around here we have fantastic stands. I think just about everything germinated.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like it when you're driving through the fields. What about your prices today?
We are at 236 on corn for Paxton. New crop is at 252. Soybeans 562 and new crop 586.
All right, Bruce, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
And that is Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist. And in the meantime, we'll have AM 580 news coming up in just a moment. But first, we'll take a short pause for technical adjustment. All right, and we're back. Thank you for accommodating that necessary adjustment. And Jim Meadows joins us indeed with AM 580 News. Jim.
Thank you, Jay. And looking at the news, Illinois' highest court says state law prohibits the release of mental health records of a former priest accused of sexual abuse. The Illinois Supreme Court justices today ruled unanimously that state laws enacted in 1979 and 88 protect the confidentiality of the documents, even though the records are from before those laws were passed. The family of seven slain in an apparent home invasion robbery in Indianapolis last night was well-liked by their neighbors. Police continue to search for a 28-year-old man named as a suspect and at least one other person. Three children were among those killed. Hundreds of Illinois firefighters and emergency workers have gathered on the University of Illinois campus for 4 days of training and instruction at the 82nd Annual Fire College. Richard Janey of the U of I Fire Service Institute says this year's event includes an increased emphasis on mutual aid. He says every class offered pays attention to how different departments and agencies can work together and communicate in emergencies. The Fire College also includes demonstrations for the public at an open house tonight at 7:30 at the training grounds off of South First Street on the U of I campus. About 20 critics of Walmart gathered outside the discount chain's Urbana store today to criticize its wages and benefits for employees. They staged a mock quarantine with hazmat suits, signs, and yellow caution tape. The protest was part of a national campaign by the group's Jobs with Justice to point out what they say are inadequate health care benefits offered by Walmart. The protest timed to coincide with Walmart's annual shareholders meeting. Walmart officials have said that the health care dilemma is a larger problem that should be addressed by federal lawmakers. Two new Illinois laws signed by Governor Blagojevich today are designed to protect people trained in first aid or medical response from being sued if they try to help injured people. One protects anyone certified in first aid by the American Red Cross or the American Heart Association if they act in good faith to help someone. The second law protects emergency medical technicians and first responders from civil lawsuits if they try to help people at the scene of an emergency. Firefighters and police officers already have similar protections. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Jay Pierce. It's 2:33. And you're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. Jim Angel joins us now for a look at the agriculture weather, a state climatologist. And, Jim, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Well, as we take a look around the Midwest and the growing regions in particular, what are you seeing in your crystal ball?
Well, you know, we've come off a week here of some pretty big rain events across the area, especially what's good news for me is that western Illinois, which has been running on the dry side all spring, has gotten some pretty good rains the last couple of days. So I think things are looking a little brighter in that part of the state and on back into Missouri as well. So right now it's a totally different picture than it was this time a year ago. You know, a year ago we were looking at our third month of really dry weather and a large portion of the especially Illinois and westward was starting to really dry out, but things look a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm. And what's going to be happening in the next week? Some are talking about a high-pressure ridge into the plains. Some had been worried that we're going to get into a hot, dry cycle, at least maybe out a bit west of our immediate area.
Yeah, that's right. If you look at the next couple of days, it's going to warm back up a little bit. We'll probably, here in central Illinois, get back up in the low to mid-80s. With another chance of rain by the middle part of next week. But especially the 8 to 14-day forecast shows a pretty wide area from about here westward being on the warm and dry side for that week number two. So I think they're at least seeing that on that time frame, although our confidence at that level is not as great as it is for what's going to happen the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. What about any problem spots that you're looking at in particular?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, probably the Quince area was the biggest concern, but now that they've gotten some rains, that'll certainly help them out. Pretty much the state of Illinois is in great shape. We've got good soil moisture, and everybody's getting some rain, so I think probably the biggest headache right now is just that we've had some cool temperatures that have slowed things down, and
And after this last batch of rain, I'm sure there's some farmers waiting to get back out into the field. So I think we're overall in pretty good shape.
Okay, so as you cruise into next week, look for things to continue improving.
That's right.
All right. One quick question about out west in the hard red winter wheat area. They've had quite a bit of rain. Is that going to start seeing some drying as they try to get that crop that was beaten by the severe dry conditions earlier out of the fields?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it looks like kind of in the next, as I said, in the 8 to 14-day forecast, it looks pretty dry out there. Also, what we did mention was the forecast for June. There also looked like they might be a little bit on the dry side out west, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, in all the bad news of last year on drought and agriculture, we had a very good wheat crop in Illinois because we had a dry spring and summer, early mm-hmm. summer there. So that's kind of ironic twist there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, thank you very much, and you have a good afternoon.
Okay, you too.
All right. That's Jim Angel, Illinois State climatologist from the Midwest Regional Climate Center, and that is today's closing market report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. For Jason Croft, our technical director today, and Dave Dickey and Todd Gleason, I'm Jay Pierce. Have a good afternoon.